Okay, so so any other questions about the homework? Okay, again, we're now, the homework is due on Tuesday, I believe, so everyone should hopefully have looked at it and started looking at it. If you don't, I have extra copies over here, so you can start to look at it. Any more questions about the homework or anything else? Okay, any questions about last class? Last class we were talking about, we're in this section on string comparison, sequence comparison. And we started talking about dynamic programming algorithms for approximate string matching. Okay, approximate, you know, string matching with errors, insertions, and deletions. And we showed an algorithm that would run, a sort of a general algorithm that would run in n squared time, n times m time. Okay, again, when I say n squared, that's as opposed to nm, n times m is the length, n is the length of the first sequence, n is the length of the second sequence. If we assume the sequences are about the same length, then n squared would be a easier way to say it, less precise, but that's what I'm liable to fall into. Because the case is somehow difficult is when the case strings are both long. But basically we've got that dynamic programming algorithm defined edit distance in something in basically quadratic time, product of the lengths of the two strings. Any questions about that algorithm? Okay? It's sort of a simple dynamic programming algorithm, but a very, very important dynamic programming algorithm. And we're in fact going to see that algorithm again today, okay, in a slightly different guise. But I want to see if there's any questions before we go in about last class or anything like that. Okay, so we were talking in the past about string comparison. And the edit distance, the notion of edit distance, is something that arises in, you know, whenever you're manipulating strings. In fact, this is a course on computational biology, so we're particularly interested in comparing strings or sequences the strings correspond to DNA sequences. And the basic edit distance paradigm we showed before had a couple of subroutines that you were free to change. Okay, we saw that you could change the initialization of how you initialize the row, the first row and the first column. And depending upon whether you set them to zero or to the position in the column, you might be able to match substrings rather than strings. Does everybody remember that? That by making a small change in the initialization, suddenly we're matching strings, substrings. Matching, you know, is this string a substring in the text rather than aligning it against the whole text? Or we saw that by changing the costs for insertion, deletion, and substitution, depending upon how we set that, we can get quite different behaviors in the alignment or the matching that is produced by the algorithm. If we made substitution very expensive, okay, it came up as we've got the longest common subsequence between the two strings. Whereas otherwise, you know, if we made substitution cheap, it would be something that the optimal alignment would take advantage of. So the actual behavior of these algorithms depends a lot upon the cost function that you use. And it should be clear that if you really want to get a good comparison of in a particular application, you need to tune your cost function very, very closely to what kind of sequences you're comparing. So to get outside biologists for a while, there's one example I might do is, suppose, let's say, you wanted to align a text that was typed by a fast typist with what they were supposed to be typing. Okay, now when I type blah, 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 it's quite often that my fingers will miss the key, but they won't miss the key by a lot. Okay, so if I'm typing with a, you know, if I bang down one of my fingers, I'm probably on the right side of the keyboard. Okay, you know, it's not the case that if I hit, you know, again, it's all my fingers, but if I hit this key, it's not likely that I meant to hit what was going with my pinky on my other hand. So if you wanted to do a comparison of text generated by typists, you might want to adjust the cost of the substitutions to reflect the idea that substituting nearby symbols is less expensive than substituting faraway symbols. Okay? And so it should be clear that application-specific cost functions can produce different alignments and that they make sense if you want to do a good job. Now, when people talk about comparing DNA sequences, okay, it's very important to have a good comparison matrix for that. Okay? And there's lots of different matrices that people use. When you hear people talk, biologists talk about sequence comparison. They will talk a lot about, oh, what matrix did you use? Okay? And by that, what they're referring to is what is the cost penalty that you're ascribing to different kinds of changes. Okay? So here we have two matrices. The one on the left is the Blass similarity matrix. I think the right on the right is the Blass transition transversion matrix. Okay? This, one of them is for edit distance computations, and one of them is for local score computations. Remember, biologists like similarity scores that go up if the strains are similar. Computer scientists like scores that go down if the strains are similar. Which matrix was designed by the computer scientist? Okay, the one on the left or the one on the right? This one. Why? Because on the central axis, the cost of substituting an A with an A is zero. Okay? So, you know, you get, if you look at this particular matrix, the cost of substituting each base with itself is zero. Okay? We don't pay a penalty for that. We pay a penalty of 5 for all substitutions, okay, except those along the other diagonal. Okay? So, A to G gets a cost of 1. G to A gets a cost of 1. C to T and T to C both get costs of 1. Otherwise, we pay penalties costs of 5. Now, why does a matrix like this make any sense? Okay? Well, it turns out that the four nucleotide bases, A, C, G, and T, we know that A likes to bind with T, okay, and C likes to bind with G. Okay? We also know there's different other ways of classifying bases. Okay? So, the bases A and G are called purines. The bases C and T are called pyrimidines. Okay? For our purposes, they're just chemical names. But what's important to know is that mutations which stay within the class, okay, that transform a purine to a purine, are much more common than mutations which transform a purine to a pyrimidine, or vice versa. Okay? So this matrix reflects the fact that if you transition within the same, you know, base type, okay, that is not as disastrous to the organism, or I mean, not so much that it's not disastrous to the organism, it's something that chemically these kind of mutations happen easier. Okay? You know, mutations, something happens in the course of replication, you know, replication, something gets zapped. Energetically, it's more likely that a transition mutation will happen than a transversion mutation. Okay? And so if you want to compare two different sequences, you are more willing to say, well, this is probably matched up with, if there's a mismatch, it's more likely that it should be within the class than across classes. So we penalize transversions more than we penalize transitions. Okay? Any questions? And it should be clear that this kind of a cost matrix does that. Okay? Any questions? Now here is a similarity score matrix, okay, where we get five points for matching an A to an A, or a C to a C, or a base to a base. In this particular matrix, we get 5 points for a match and 4 points for a mismatch, or lose 4 points for a mismatch. Okay? And in this particular matrix, it doesn't seem to care whether it's a transversion or a transition. But there is something interesting about these cost functions. What is interesting about this cost function? It's a little different than edit distance. Okay? Okay? Excuse me? But there's positive and negative values, but I guess what I'd say is that the cost and the penalty are different. The positive value is different than the negative value. You get 5 points for a match. You lose 4 points for a mismatch. Okay? Under the edit distance things, I usually think of that as being symmetric. Okay? Or more symmetric. So what does this suggest a good alignment is going to be? It's perfectly willing to let you have a mismatch in order to have a match, right? Does everybody see that? So if you want to, if let's say we formed a, we wanted to align the sequence x, 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 all x's, against xo, 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 okay? That would get a very high score, according to this, if you had a long enough string of matches. Because you're going to gain 5 points for a match, 4 points for the mismatch, 5 points for the match, 4 points for the mismatch. For every one of those repeats, okay, XO, you would get 1 point, okay? And so this is sort of a penalty, a cross function like this is going to reward long approximate matches, okay? You know, even if there's a lot of mismatches. So exactly how you set those penalty functions makes a difference in what the observed behavior is. Any questions about that? Okay. Which is the best matrix for any particular application? Well, that requires some thinking and some hand-waving and some intuition and, you know, but that's one reason why they argue a lot about what the right basis is. Because clearly you want to align strings right. What the right matrix is, you know, somewhat of an art. Okay. Any questions? Let me show you a few more matrices that people might use in aligning sequences. Because you know, there's a lot of work that has gone on in designing interesting comparison matrices. And you know, so here's one that I find kind of interesting. It's the genetic code matrix, and the alphabet here is of size 20 or so. What is this comparing? Is this comparing DNA bases? No, what's it comparing? Protein residues, protein bases. Okay, and this is a matrix defined on all protein amino all amino acids versus all amino acids. Okay, and presumably also a stop codon. And presumably an unknown symbol, which is an X. Okay, I guess. Okay, and what this is measuring is how many bits, how many bases do you have to change in order to convert from a codon of one amino acid to a codon of the other amino acid. Okay, remember that because of the triplet code, the way things got coded, every amino acid was specified by three DNA bases, right? Because there's 20 amino acid residues and 64 triplets, there's multiple different, multiple different codons, multiple different ways to encode certain of these amino acids. But suppose you're comparing one protein sequence to another, and you're aligning, you say, I want to align this protein residue with that one. Well, the minimum number of base mutations that has to have happened has to be the minimum number of changes it takes to go from a codon that encodes for this to a codon that encodes for that. So if you look at this thing, the total would go, the possible values are from 0 to 1 to 2 to 3. 0 is what it takes to convert a amino acid to itself. Okay? 3 is, does happen, that to go between a, you know, the M residue and the Y residue here takes 3 mismatches. Usually you can do it in 1 or 2. Okay? But this would be one way to measure how far apart protein amino acid, you know, amino acids are in a coding sequence. So if you're comparing protein sequences, it might be fair to use a matrix like this to measure how far apart the residues are. Yes?
What does the two changes
get from the last one to the last one? What did the two changes get from the last one to the last one? You mean over here. Why is it not zero down the whole diagonal? Two possible explanations. One is I may have typed this in wrong, or copied it wrong. More likely is these are probably special symbols, like sort of unknown, okay? And maybe you don't want to really align an unknown to an, or an unknown. So one way or another, I don't know. But okay, but it should be clear that the values should go from 0 to 3, and it should be that in principle they should be 0 down the main diagonal, okay? What? But there's 23 rows and columns, and probably what is the case is that some of these are against stuff. Those last three are probably, they may be groups of residues, okay? They may be, you know, implicit, you know, ambiguous basis saying, I'm not sure what it is, okay? And it may be that they don't want you. It was bad to align unknown to unknown. They'd rather have you align unknown to something. Okay? Any questions? Yes? Right. Right, so this is, the point is that what you're saying, I think, is that because there's multiple codons coding for this amino acid and multiple codons for the other amino acid, you have to decide, should this entry be the minimum distance, should be the maximum distance, the average distance between correspondent codons. They have chosen the minimum distance, okay? You know, because somehow that in order to get from here to here, you know you had to have done at least two mutations, okay? But again, other choices might be possible. Okay. Here's another matrix which is used in comparing protein sequences. Okay. It has to do with these. As much as I like to think of proteins as sequences and strings, unfortunately they are molecules, and molecules have properties. Okay. And one of the properties that you hear about, okay, with proteins and amino acids, is that. But certain amino acids are hydrophobic and certain amino acids are hydrophilic. Okay? And I interpret this as, when I hear this translated, it means that they either like water or don't like water. Now most proteins, you know, in your body, things are wet. Okay? So there is water. Okay? But proteins sort of form shapes. They fold and bend in certain ways. And if an amino acid does not like to be in water, it may try to sort of hide itself inside a, inside the interior of sort of the folded up protein, so it doesn't come in contact with it. Okay, these are sort of physical forces that operate on these different residues. But you can sort of compare that certain residues, like or dislike water, to similar amounts. Okay, so if I take a look at this one here, the R and the K bases seem to like water in equal amounts. The D and E bases seem to like water a similar amount, okay? On the other hand, the W and the R bases are diametrically opposed in how much they like or dislike being near water. So if you think about it, in an evolutionary sense, if you want to have one protein evolve to another, presumably mutations are happening, but if a mutation happens that drastically changes the shape of the protein probably doesn't work anymore. Okay, and that would be a very expensive change. So if you're doing a substitution that doesn't really change whether this part likes or dislikes water, you might get a different amino acid residue, but it might still sit in the same place. It still might not change the shape very much. So these kind of mutations, even though they might require more DNA changes, might be preferred. Okay, and so this is now a matrix not based on coding similarity, but based on molecular similarity of the parts. Okay? Which is more appropriate to align a protein? It depends upon your particular application. Okay? But you should recognize that there are these different matrices and that they do different things, and they're designed for different reasons. And this is why comparing sequences is somewhat of an art. Okay? It's not a completely, you know, is a sequence similar to another one? You know, you have to be a little bit careful how you make that decision. Any questions? Now, the matrices that you hear most about are things called PAM and occasionally the BLOSSOM matrices. Okay? So when you talk to people who do sequencing comparisons, they're always mumbling things like, oh yeah, I use a PAM 50, PAM 250. What does that mean? Okay? So PAM matrices are designed for, comparing, again, there are PAM matrices on, I believe, it's mostly used in protein-protein comparison, although that may very well be PAM matrices in for DNA. What the PAM matrices do, PAM stands for point accepted mutation. Okay, and what they did in order to compute these things, sometimes what you're trying to do is to figure out what is the probability that in evolution, in the course of evolution, one particular amino acid residue got changed to another one. We see that there's two different phenomena that could be at work. One is, what's the smallest DNA change you have to make? The other is how much does it mess up the protein? And which of those is more important is maybe a little mysterious. You know, how, you know, when you say a priori, which is more important? So what in the pan matrices, the way they were created was the biologists aligned two very, very similar proteins. Let's say proteins from species that had not diverged by too much time. Okay? I don't know if too much time is a million years, 5 million years, a small amount of time. Okay? And a small enough amount of time, so that let's say that the proteins agreed in 99% of the bases, the amino acid residues. If the proteins are very, very similar, it's easy to align it. Okay? It's easy to align. If I give you the text of the Gettysburg Address, and I then go in and change one character, it's very easy to go back and figure out where did I make the typing mistake, right? You go and you line them up with one substitution. So if you have aligning two very similar proteins, the actual doing of the alignment is not that tricky. Okay? And you can count how often was each base substituted for each other base. Okay? So these PAM matrices were done. The PAM-1 matrix was built by analyzing a bunch of alignments of very similar proteins and seeing what transitions, transformations were made. Okay? And counting the frequency of that. And giving a high score to the transitions that happened relatively often, and a low score to the ones that didn't. Okay? And does that make sense as a reasonable methodology? Then what they did, in order to compute, so the PAM-1 matrix gives you a good way to compare proteins that are very, very similar. Now I want to compare proteins that are very, very similar, but in fact what you really want to do is to compare proteins that are very, very far apart. So what the PAM-50 matrix is, or 250 matrix, okay, is supposed to correspond to the matrices formed by when you have 50% mutations, or 250% mutations. If you think about it, if you wait long enough in evolutionary terms, not only will bases change, but bases will change multiple times, okay? So the way that they build matrices for further distance, the one PAM, one matrix gives you the transition of score, the score of how likely you are to go from one base to another with 1% mutations. By raising this matrix to a power, if you square this matrix, squaring a matrix in some sense, if you remember from graph theory, sort of walks through all possible pairs of tests of length 2 in that matrix. Okay? And so raising this matrix to a power, in some sense, walks through sequences of events. Okay? And by raising this matrix to a power, you get a matrix that is going to give you how you might score changes for proteins that are far apart. Okay? And so when you want to compare two species that are quite far apart, you make a guess as to in millions of years or in how long far apart are these two proteins likely to be. And then you use the appropriate matrix corresponding to that distance to give you a good idea about it. Any questions about that? Okay? So that may seem like a reasonable methodology. The PAM matrices are important. More recently, people use sometimes things called blossom matrices. You hear blossom matrices. And I think what these are the same basic methodology as the PAM matrices, but they derive from more data later. Okay, so the PAM matrices are old. Now, maybe you like blossom matrices better. Okay, but that's one of the issues in sequence comparison, is make sure you have the right costs. Any questions? Okay? So what I would like to now talk about is, so now we have this idea that we can use dynamic programming to compare sequences. We know that choosing the right matrix is important. The critical problem of biological interest in sequence comparison is not exactly what I've talked about so far. Okay? We looked at a couple of different variations on sequence comparison. We saw the case where we were comparing an entire string against another string and seeing what the smallest number of changes are. We saw the case where we had one short string, a pattern string, and we were comparing that to a long string and seeing where does this pattern occur in the text. The real case of biological interest would be, I have two long DNA sequences. I don't know anything about them. I want to know where is there some similarity between the two of them. Okay? Where are there local features in both that are interesting? Okay? So let's think about,
for example, comparing genomes. Here we have the human genome. Here we have the mouse genome. Okay, both of these are the sequence. What you really want to now know is, what is similar between man and mouse? Okay? Because if you think about it, there's been a large period of time evolutionarily between man and mouse. Okay? Large enough that we don't look like mice. Okay? But small enough that there's still certainly a similarity between the important genes that we share. Okay? So you would like to figure out, where are there genes in men that are similar to genes in mice? And they may have got shuffled with time. You don't know that the order of the genes is the same. In fact, most definitely it's not. There's been extensive reordering of genes. But it is likely the case that there are proteins in mice that are very similar to men. You'd like to find them. If you do a global comparison, you won't see them. Okay? What you want to do is a comparison of all little strings in the first sequence against all little strings in the second sequence. Okay? And ideally find the local alignments. You'd like to say, hey, this is very similar to that. This is very similar to that. And identify the local features of interest. Okay? Any questions? Is that sort of reasonably well motivated? It's a little different than the kind of sequence comparisons that I'm used to doing, okay? But it should be well motivated from this. There's several reasons biologically why this is well motivated, okay? So, you know, again, I think that recognizing regions conserved between species is important. Recognizing parts of genes, okay? It's often the case that for various reasons, genes are split into pieces, okay? We'll talk more about that later. But again, recognizing, does this part of a gene, does this protein appear anywhere as a part of a gene somewhere in the sequence is interesting. So we're really interested in comparing local alignment, not global alignment. Okay? And here's why biologists tend to think in terms of similarity scores rather than edit distance. Okay? In edit distance, what were we talking about? The cost of transforming one string to another. What is the corresponding notion to saying, gee, is there an interesting feature comparing this part of the sequence to that part of the sequence? Okay? To transform this string to another, you know, it's not the way the beginning of the strings really are. Okay? What biologists are going to be interested in is in a local function like DIJ, where we say DIJ is the highest scoring local alignment, okay, ending at the ith character of the first string and the jth character of the second string. So this score is going to be defined for all pairs of positions in the strings, okay? And if we were using, let's say, edit distance here, if you want to know what is the lowest cost way to transform a string ending at I with a string ending at J, what is the lowest cost way to transform a string ending at I to a string ending at J? A local string. Okay? What about the local string of zero length? Okay? So to transform an empty string to an empty string, you can do that very cheaply. But that's not going to show up interesting features. Okay? Instead, what we want to know is every pair, how interesting a place is this? And that's why they think in terms of scores. Okay? So the algorithm to do this is something called the Smith-Waterman algorithm. Anyone know why they call it the Smith-Waterman algorithm? Anyone want to hazard a guess? Named that right. It was discovered by Smith and Waterman. Okay? And but it's something that you hear when biologists talk about Smith-Waterman. Somehow they mean sequence comparison in some way. It's sort of become more than just an algorithm. It's sort of
the word that people use when you talk about sequence comparison. And here we're going to be talking about doing local alignment. We're going to use the same basic algorithm as we used for edit distance, with a small number of changes. First of all, in the edit distance algorithm I showed before, we're minimizing the distance, the cost of the three options. Pick the three options of minimum cost. Now we're going to want to pick the option that maximizes the score of the three possibilities. That's not such an interesting change. The other thing is more interesting. We want to know that we're doing local alignments. So somehow we want to allow the ability for every local alignment to start fresh at every possible place. So we're going to allow the option that the cell of a matrix is always allowed to be zero. Okay? The best local alignment at any square in the matrix is always going to be positive. Okay? And this is going to allow us to start fresh at new sequences. And finally, since we're looking for the best local alignment, the best chunk of this subsequence that appears somewhere in this other subsequence, when we look at the final goal cell, we're not going to be just looking at the bottom corner or the bottom row. We're going to have to look over the entire matrix, okay, to try to identify the most interesting cell. So let me show you the code, and then we can, it should look quite similar to what we saw before. If you did not understand it, this is a good time to ask about it again. So some of you who are not CS people here, okay, or intimidated by dynamic programming or whatever it is, this is a good chance to get another crack at understanding how these alignment algorithms work. They're really not that, once you see the trick, they're not that bad, but until you see it, it's a little mystery. So what is Smith Waterman? Again, what we're going to start out by doing is we have a matrix of cells, okay, and we're going to initialize every matrix cell, okay, we're going to want to compare a sequence S to a sequence T. We're going to have a matrix that's going to be the length of the first string times the length of the second string. We're going to initialize every cell in the matrix, okay, before we initialize the one column and one row. In some sense, everything's going to happen at every cell in the matrix. We might as well initialize the whole thing. Not 100% sure that's really necessary, but it's harmless. Okay? More interesting is, what am I going to do at every cell? For every value I and j, I'm going to now start out by saying n sub I j is going to be equal to 0. Okay? And in fact, its parent is minus 1. This is why maybe I didn't really need to initialize the whole matrix, because it looks like I'm initializing it fresh again here. But what I'm basically doing now is looping through my three possible costs. The cost of insertion or deletion or substitution. And if the cost of match or insert or delete is greater than the cost or the score of the I currently have there, copy the new cost, the bigger cost here, and update the parent to tell me what that move was that took me to that place. I need the cost of a match. If I want to match it, then what is my score going to be? Well, the reward or penalty I get for substituting this character for this, plus the cost of what I get by chopping one character off both of those strings. Okay, yes. The parent is going to be telling me which cell do I walk from. So remember, in one of these matrix alignments, we're going to be talking about, when we walk back in look at the traceback algorithm from last time. In order to reconstruct the sequence, we started from the last character in the alignment, and then walked backwards. So suppose I know what the optimal score is in cell IJ. If I want to reconstruct how I got there, I had to figure out which of the three options was it that took me to this cell. So here, in some sense, I'm working forward. I'm figuring out What was the best choice of move to make? Match, insert, or substitution in order to fill in the IJ's entry? The parent is telling me which step did I use? Or implicitly, which matrix cell did I come from before? If my best option was a match, then I came from the cell I minus 1, J minus 1. If my parent was a insert, then I came from the cell I, J minus 1. So the parent is going to tell me how to walk backwards so I can reconstruct what the alignment was that got me here. Okay? So what are the differences from the previous algorithm? Basically, the main difference is really this. That instead of picking the lower of the three options, or the best of the three options, I'm picking the best of four options. Insert, delete, substitute, or start from scratch. That zero is sort of the important thing. Okay? Any questions? I once went to a talk where we had famous people in the early days of sequence alignment talking about how important, how the Smith-Waterman algorithm was discovered or something like that. And they were basically talking about, oh, I was the one who came up with that zero. Okay? And it seemed, relatively pointless, or it was all dynamic programming, it's all editing, it's the same algorithm as before. But by inserting the zero here, allowing zero as a choice, now you're given a choice of making local comparisons. Okay? You're starting your alignment fresh at every possibility. Okay? And so it's going to let you identify local features instead of global features. Any questions? Okay? So the other auxiliary routines, we still need to specify what our goal cell is. Again, if we want to identify the feature with strongest local similarity, now our goal cell means look at all pairs of positions in the sequences. Find out what the score you got at the IJ's value. If this is larger than the best score I've ever seen, keep track of that position. The position I'm interested in is the position in the entire matrix with the highest score. Okay? And otherwise, basically, I'm in the same situation. I have to initialize my cells, all got a cost of zero, parents of empty. The minus one means that this cell does not have a parent. If a cell has value of zero, that means that it's sort of the start of a local comparison, the end of the... There's no interesting local feature here. So that's the end of our trail. Otherwise, we have to have matrices for the cost telling us how much do we pay for a substitute, an insertion, or a deletion, or a substitution, or how much do we get rewarded for a local feature. So I'm implementing that 5-4 matrix that we saw before with these two functions. Any questions? Yes? So the question, are you looking for one local alignment or what? Well, it depends on what you're looking for. Okay? The way I've implemented this algorithm, I'm finding the point of local similarity, the single pair that has the highest score. A biologist might be more likely to say, well, tell me all places where there is a high score. Because if there is a high score, that will probably be interesting. Okay, so you might want to change your goal function to trace the matrix in that way. Okay? But you have that opportunity. So here I did a local alignment as an example. I compared two strands. Okay, I'm saying for the public good, these Republicans. Okay? These are two strings I'm comparing. And I'm using this edit distance thing where I'm comparing getting 5 points for a character match, losing 4 points for a mismatch, and 4 points for an insertion or a deletion. What happens here if you look at this matrix comparing in beat Republicans for the public good? What is the similar sequence? Okay, it's going to revolve around public is in both of them, right? Well, look at what happens in the dynamic programming matrix here. Okay? Most of the matrix is all zeros. In this case, there's very little similarity between those strings. Occasionally a 5 pops up, meaning that the characters matched E. Why is there a tail of 1s trailing behind that, those 5s? Because the best thing way to match here to here is to get credit for that 5 and then pay the deletion penalty here. Remember, the value of each cell is the best alignment ending at that point. But look what happens around the point where there really is a sequence comparison, a local feature. Now you start really seeing it. Okay, I think the highest score I see here is 31. 31 shows up where? It shows up at the end of public and public. Why is it 31 and not an exact match? Okay, I said we get 5 points for a match and 4 points for a mismatch. Public is how many points? If you get 5, 10, 15, 20, 21, 25, 30. Why do I have a score of 31 here? Because the previous match, if you notice, is public, space public. This is space RE public. I got one match here at the cost of a substitution and a deletion. Okay? And that was deemed a better thing to do. Okay? So, does everybody see how you can sort of see local features of interest, even though you're comparing long strings? Okay? Any questions? Okay? So, yes? Why am I not keeping track of where I'm starting the match? Because I'm keeping track of where I end the match. And I will walk backwards if I want to find out where I start the match. Okay, so you want me to keep track of the start of the match. Gee, is this match interesting? Well, I will claim that once, if I know the cell that is interesting to me, once at the end I have, if I know the parents, I can go from the back and walk, I can start from the end. I know that this is where the match is interesting. I can walk backwards by following my parent pointers. And I know that I will hit the, how will I know I hit the end of my parent pointers? Where I get a -1 for my parent. Okay? So I don't need to keep track of where the match starts. I can keep track at the end and walk backwards. Why don't I keep track of where it starts and go back down? Well, I don't have any reason to believe it's interesting at this point. Okay? The way I know it's interesting is when I find something interesting and can walk backwards. Okay? So that suffices, and that's the correct way to do it. Any questions about this? Okay? So it should be clear that now I can identify local features of interest. Okay, in two strings. Search for needles in haystacks, if you wish. Big haystack, big haystack, find the local needles of interest. Okay? Any questions? Yes? Well, this highest value will not always occur along the diagonal. If it had been Republicans beat, okay, then this would have shifted over. Okay, it's comparing a local feature against a local feature. Okay, now the global alignment probably hugs the diagonal a lot. Doesn't necessarily do that, but if you're comparing the whole string against the whole string, if there's going to be a high score, but the path can't take you too far out of the way, because of course, every time you take a non-direct diagonal walk, you're taking insertions or deletions. But here we're looking for local features. The local features of interest could pop up anywhere, which is why at the end, to find the maximum, I've got to scan all my cells to find the maximum.
If
what?
It's not
perfectly on the diagonals, what you're saying? Yeah, okay. The fact that it's even close to the diagonal is misleading. It could be anywhere, okay? It could have been that the last part of the string matched the first part, matched the middle, it could be over here if the last part of the string matched the beginning part of that string, okay? Any questions? Yes? That's not interesting. The reason they're the same length is because I can fit them on the slide. Okay? But in fact, you can compare, again, the cost is going to be the product of the string lengths, the number of cells in the matrix. Okay? So if I want to compare an extremely long sequence against a not-so-long sequence, which probably is the more common application, Maybe a biologist has sequenced the gene, and now they have 1,000 bases in their gene, and they want to compare it against everything that is known, the human genome or something like that. It's actually probably a little bit ambitious, okay? But in general, there's no reason why the string should be the same length, okay? Yes? Okay, are there more efficient algorithms? Now, this is one thing we're going to talk about a little bit. First of all, is this algorithm efficient or not efficient? If you want all the maximum alignments, then I can tell you this algorithm is efficient, okay? Because it might be that every single pair might correspond to the maximum alignments. Let's say I want to know all possible maximum scores. Okay? All places in one string where maximum score sequences end. Well, suppose I give you a string of all A's and compare them against a string of all B's. Then every cell represents the ending of a maximum alignment, right? The matrix will be all zeros. So to report all solutions, I'll claim you can hope for a better answer. But that's not what you were really asking, I think. You want to find, gee, if there's only a small number of interesting features, do I really have to compare everything against everything else? Okay? And the bottom line, we'll talk later, probably next class, about some heuristic algorithms. If you don't guarantee me that you're going to find the optimal alignment, that you're going to try to find something that is heuristically good, then in fact there are faster algorithms. But in general, this is sort of the, if you could do it, make sure you don't miss anything. Basically, you've got schemes that are basically like this dynamic programming scheme. Okay, and so you are seemingly doomed to quadratic behavior. Okay? Any questions? That it is quadratic means that you can only compare modest sized sequences against modest sized sequences with this. Okay? So, you're not going to want to compare the human genome against the mouse genome with this. Because then you've got 3 billion against 3 billion, and that's large. But to compare, you know, gee, I really care about this region in mouse and this region in human. I want to find where is the mice gene really line up. This is sort of the gold standard for doing it. It would be a Smith-Waterman type algorithm. Yes? Could sub-extrees help in solving this problem? Part of it is, sub-extrees, remember, were very good for finding exact matches. Okay, that's really what we were using them for, was for saying, gee, does this pattern exist exact, you know, does this string occur in more than one place? Now, if you want to do exact matches, matches of long runs of exact matches, then maybe using sub-extrees might tell you where can you look that would be interesting. But now you're talking about heuristics. When you have a lot of mismatches, when you have a lot of sequence dissimilarity, you're not going to get long runs of matches that necessarily identify what the interesting place is. So for example, think back to the example we wanted to align XXXXXXX against XOXOXOXOXO. Under the previous matrix, we could get a high score by simply deleting every other character. That you would not find long patterns of matches. There's never more than a chain of one character. You know, there's no place where two characters in the pattern match two characters in the text. Okay? So that's why you got to be a little bit tricky, careful here. If you're comparing this far apart, you cannot expect to do, you know, find things by looking for exact matches. Okay? Although, for efficiency, that's the way you got to, you have to look for those kind of things. Okay? So this is the right way to compare distant sequences when you really care about getting the comparison right. But there's a limit to how far this can scale. Any questions? Okay? Good. So let's look at making the Smith-Waterman algorithm a little even more sensitive to the kind of pattern matches that occur in biological sequences. Okay? So, we now know that Smith-Waterman lets us find local similarities. Long sequence against long sequence, find local regions that are of interest. One thing that occurs in biological sequence analysis is the question of how you penalize long gaps. Okay? So let's say, again, I had the example here of compare aligning the sequence XXXXX against XOXOXOXO. In biological sequence analysis, for various reasons, it is often the case that introducing a gap is expensive, but the number of characters involved in the deletion is not that expensive. Okay? So if you were to go to a biologist and say, look, I have the following sequence alignments.
XO, 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 I guess X, 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 X. Or I have the sequence X, X, O, 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 X, X. This would achieve a fifth order of score corresponding to four deletions. This would correspond to a fifth order bit score of four deletions. And yet, the biologist would say, well, this is a much more interesting map to me. Why? Because, yeah, they're deletions, but really what happened was only one evolutionary change. Okay? Somehow this got cut out of the sequence to make that, or this got inserted. And so the interpretation events that happen in long runs, rather than as individual insert deletes. So if you want to compare sequences under this line, the right model for doing that comparison would be to charge you a lot for starting a run of deletions, but relatively little for each deletion within that run. Okay? And that gets into the whole concept of property adjusting for the penalizing for gaps. Okay? Any questions? So biologically, why might gaps penalties come in? Maybe the most compelling example, okay, let me give two biological reasons for why that might happen. Probably the most compelling is that in genes in higher organisms. Genes, remember, are DNA sequences that code for proteins, tell you how to make proteins. In higher organisms, genes do not exist as consecutive runs of bases. Okay? Genes are split into coding regions, which are called exons, and jump regions, or intermediate regions that are deleted, called introns. Why is that? Well, that's life. That's the way it is. Okay? Now, supposedly I have a protein. Okay? And I want to see where does this protein align itself? Where is the gene for this protein? What I would want to say is, what's a good alignment? It's not a bad alignment for me to say, oh, look, there's a codon for this base here, this base here, this base here, this base there. What would be the proper alignment for me to say? Can you find a small number of chunks such that the protein aligns itself very well in each chunk? These introns might be thousands of bases long. Okay? You don't want to pay a high penalty for every one of these deletions. Okay? You may want to minimize the number of pieces you need to code for the gene. Okay? And that I claim is a perfect, you know, this is something that clearly happens, but I think it motivates the idea that you want to find a way to compare sequences where you can pay once for deletion, you get a cost reduction for buying deletions in bulk. Okay? And that's what we're talking about here. Any questions?
So, yeah. So that means starting all over the same cost of 0, that particular sequence begins.
Well, that sort of leads to what I could do if I did a Smith-Waterman score. If I did a Smith-Waterman alignment between the protein sequence and the corresponding triplets of that protein sequence and the corresponding DNA sequence, I would expect to see high local features at each exon. But if I might see, let's say, other high-scoring regions, if I want to do a global alignment, of where is the gene, the entire gene for this protein? What I would really want to find is where can I match the entire protein against the sequence? where I don't get charged heavily for the gaps in there, so long as I have relatively few gaps in there. Okay? Any questions? That should be a reasonable situation where, once you accept the fact that genes are arranged as split genes, which is certainly the case, it should be clear that this problem of gap arises in aligning proteins with DNA. Any questions? Okay? Another situation biologically that happens is that there are strange mutation events or things called mobile DNA elements called transposons, which somehow happen to jump into DNA sequences and just hang around and reproduce themselves. Remember we talked about repeats at one point, how we use repeats to identify that O.J. Simpson was the one whose blood was on the floor? And we measured a number of repeats. Well, these repeats somehow sometimes jump into DNA sequences for reasons I don't fully understand. Okay? But it might be the case that you're looking to align a gene and somehow in another species some transposon has come in and somebody with a lot of repetitions jump in the middle of the gene. You would want to pay once for the cost of the transposon rather than for every base of it, because the transposon might be very long, might be 100 bases, 200 bases. Okay? Any questions? Okay. What other motivation for the idea of gaps and why you might want to charge differently for gaps than deletions would come if you look at movie reviews. You look at a terrible movie on a, you look at the advertisement for a terrible movie. It will say, this is ... a great ... movie. Okay? And what, Gene Siskel and Ebert. Okay, and what happened? Okay, if you look at the full text, this is a great waste of time. Okay, I can't believe anyone made a movie like this. Okay, so suppose we wanted to try to align a, figure out, Siskel wanted to figure out where did they quote him from. Okay, the text of his review would be one of these things. The actual clip that was appeared in the advertising would be the other pattern. You want to figure out where did they match, how did they match the pattern with the smallest number of deletions, okay? And that sort of would be a similar notion of why you would want to have a gap penalty rather than a per base penalty. Any questions? Okay? So it should be clear that this is a reasonable model of sequence comparison under a lot of different applications. And it should be clear that the dynamic programming algorithm we have already had will charge you a lot for long runs of deletions. You know, there's no way that we have seen yet to calibrate it for gaps. Okay? So I'd like to now talk about two variations of the Smith-Waterman algorithm, or our general dynamic programming, such that we calibrate it so that we can pay gaps, pay a fixed penalty for a gap, okay, or a variable cost penalty for a gap based on its length. Okay? Any questions? So the first algorithm I'd like to show you is, suppose, let's say, that our gap penalty is a function of length, but it's some sort of a weird penalty that has no particular, maybe that in some application, gaps of length 20 to 25 are cheap, but short gaps are expensive and long gaps are expensive. Or maybe you could imagine an application where gaps of length that are equal to a prime number is expensive and otherwise it's cheap. Some sort of a gap penalty where we really just can't assume anything about it. Okay? Where all that we are given is a gap penalty that charges us a certain cost depending upon the length for the insertion or deletion. Okay? In this case, if we want to find the optimum alignment, where we can't assume anything about the gap funnel penalty, I want to propose the following kind of a dynamic programming algorithm. Okay? We're going to let V sub I j be just like it was with the regular Smith-Waterman. The optimal alignment ending at ij. Okay? What if our cost options were the following? We could
again, pay, do a match or a mismatch of one character, and then pay the price of up to, you know, basically deleting one from one string and one from the other string. Or we could delete a run of characters from one of the strings. The cost we decide to delete J minus K characters is going to be J minus K for the deletion, plus whatever it took to get to I comma K. Okay? So if we choose to delete a large number of characters, the cost is going to be the cost of getting up to the point right on the other string right before that deletion, plus the cost of doing that deletion. Okay? And if this insert and deletion function is a function of length, but it is such a weird function of length, we don't know anything about it, you know, that we can't analyze it in any serious way, then I claim that the choice to figure out the best possible alignment at I and J, we have to look at every possible, that if we could end at every possible number of characters we could have deleted up to this last point. We're going to end in a deletion. We might have deleted one or two or three or four all the way up to I characters. And for each one of them, we're going to get a different score. So the best possible alignment might be to check all possible prefixes of the string and then pay the cost of, the best cost where it is, the max of the cost of getting that prefix plus the cost of deleting the remaining characters. Does everybody sort of see that? Or any questions about that? Okay, and likewise, the same kind of, if we want to delete from the pattern instead of the string, instead of marching along that row and trying all earlier values in that row, I can try all earlier values in my column. So now if I'm aligning two strings from this point, to figure out the optimal thing to do here, I have to take a look at every possible prefix of this string and see if the best option might be map the prefix here up to here and then do one big deletion for a particular cost. Okay? Any questions about that? What is the time complexity of this algorithm? Okay? Now this is going to potentially get expensive. Why is it expensive? Now each cell of the matrix, to update, I'm not looking at three cells. I'm looking at one cell plus the cells representing every prefix, plus the cells representing every prefix. I might look at n plus m cells in order to update any particular cell. Does everybody see that? If I have to look at all these cells, I'm going to be paying an extra linear cost in doing this. Yes? We'll deal with the entire matrix of memory at a later point. Okay? But does everybody agree that in order to now, with this recurrence relation, it looks like I'm, I'm going to now have to pay something like n squared m plus m squared n, or n cubed instead of n squared, if we allow arbitrary gap penalties. And there's no real way to avoid it. I mean, it might very, or obvious way to avoid this thing. I mean, if my cross function is really weird, like if I deleted something of size 356, I get $1 million, okay? You sort of have to try all possibilities in order to take care of that. Any questions? So this problem of aligning with arbitrary gap weights is sort of was one of the earlier algorithms developed. You sometimes hear biologists talk about the Needleman once alignment. And that sometimes means to them, well, Smith-Waterman with gaps. Okay? But this is really the Needleman-Wunsch algorithm. It's an n-cubed algorithm for allowing arbitrary gaps. Okay? But n-cubed, remember, n-squared was too slow to align whole genomes against each other. N-cubed is going to be even worse. What is fortunate is that there is a faster algorithm for a very natural class of gap penalties. Okay? We say that a gap cost is an affine gap cost, or a linear gap cost. If the cost of a gap is A plus BT for a gap of length T. Okay? What was the cost penalty that we paid for under the Smith-Waterman algorithm so far? What was the cost final penalty we were going to be paying for a gap? What was it? Minus 4 for every deletion, or some constant times the length of the gap, right? This is allowing us now to say we'll pay a penalty for starting the gap plus a B times T term. Okay? So we make this A penalty very high, then that will make it hard, make it undesirable to start a gap, but relatively advantageous. If A was high relative to B, it's expensive to start a gap, but you can afford to delete a lot of characters without that much extra cost. Okay? So this is a reasonable model. What would be the right cost penalties for that movie review problem, where you want to try to figure out the minimum number of chops that you need to make in order to figure out how did the reviewer say this? Okay, can you make an excuse to say the reviewer said the movie was good? What would be the cost of final things that we want here for A and B? Got it? Any ideas? What is the relative values of A and B? A should be high and B should be zero if you think about it. I mean, you know, if you really, you know, if you want to prove it, if it's sufficient for you to prove that the reviewer said it, doesn't matter if it's delete 300 words between connecting their ideas. Okay? So, we can get different behavior. If we can handle affine gap penalties, we can handle both the case of where we really don't care how long the gaps are, or we care how long the gaps are by simply modulating between those two constants. Okay? How fast can we adjust, can we optimize, find the minimum cost alignment in a world where we pay this kind of a gap penalty? Okay? It's a less general function. So if you tell me you can do it in N cubed, I'm not going to be very impressed. But in fact, you can do this in N square time, the same time as the normal algorithm, the Smith-Waterman algorithm, using the following kind of a recurrence relation. We're going to let Vij be the cost of, or the score of, the optimal alignment ending at ij. We're going to say it is the best of three possibilities. Okay? One of them is our usual, well, we might at the last character decide to do a substitution or a match. Okay? And that's the same term as before. The other thing is that we're going to let EI and E and F correspond to insertion and deletion. We're going to say the following. The E value is going to be, what is the cost of the optimal alignment having ended in a gap? You know, by the an insertion gap, or the optimal alignment ending in a deletion gap. So these variables, these terms in the recurrence, will encode the state that the last thing we did was a deletion. In order to get into that state, we will have to pay the cost of starting a gap. But if we decide to do another deletion right now, we don't have to pay for the cost of starting the gap again. Okay? So Vij is going to be the cost of not being in the gap. Okay, or being, you know, whether we are or are not in a gap, what is the best spring ending here, the best alignment score ending here? Eij is the best score ending at ij with a deletion. This is the best score ending at ij with an insertion. So what is it going to do? Well, we're going to end with a deletion. It could be that we were previously in a deletion, and we delete one more character, in which case we pay the cost just of deleting that character. Or it could have been we were in an insertion or a substitution state before. And now we're going to delete the first character in a run. So in order to go from the not in a in a deletion state to a deletion state, we have to pay the gap start cost penalty here. So the optimal way to go match from I to J, ending in a deletion, is either to add one more to the cost of what was previously in a deletion, or to start a gap here and pay the deletion and the start of gap and the first deletion character cost. Okay? Does everybody see how we're using these other variables to maintain the state that we have already paid that gap cost? Okay? And in jumping out of that to get back to here, okay, we leave the gap cost. Any questions about that? How many people sort of see that? How many people don't see that? Okay. Anyone who doesn't see it, who will admit to it or wants a question like, why is that? I don't understand it. Any questions like that? Okay? So the neat thing here is that, in fact, if you're willing to pay for affine gaps, say your thing is modeled by affine gaps, we can add this to our Smith-Waterman computation, okay, without paying an additional asymptotic cost. Okay? Now, in fact, what people, and I guess if you look at sort of the standard, one of the standard string alignment costs for aligning sequences, the costs that are used is to make the start of a gap cost be 10, and the actual deletion cost be 2. So somehow starting a gap is as bad as doing 5 deletions. Okay, so that seems to give you some intuition as that starting gaps are, you know, relatively expensive. They're not as unbelievably expensive, but they're things you have to keep in mind. Okay? Any questions? Yeah? Well, the mother substitution is encoded in that match function, and it depends upon whatever matrix you want. So what's nice is now if you have a Smith-Waterman algorithm which handles affine gap penalties, what can you tweak for your particular application? You can adjust the substitution matrix. You can adjust how much you pay for an insertion or a deletion, or even an insertion and pay a cost for, you know, different cost for starting an insertion or starting a deletion than for successive additional characters. So you have now a lot of parameters you can tweak to try to come up with the right alignment, okay, the best alignment for your particular application. Are you aligning typing a fast typist against the right text? Are you aligning a movie reviewer against what was in an advertisement? Are you aligning a protein sequence against a DNA sequence? How many millions of years apart? Do you worry about gaps? You have the choice now to play around with this within the framework of the same basic algorithm. Okay? Any questions? So that's why Smith-Waterman is sort of a good thing. It lets us do local comparisons with a lot of flexibility. Okay, in the same n squared time. Now, in fact, there are algorithms that will handle, we've looked at a very, very special gap penalty cost of start plus linear. We've looked at the case of arbitrary gap penalties. In fact, we can look at well-behaved gap penalties. People seem to like to pay a cost for a gap that is somehow logarithmic in the length of the gap. Okay, so a long gap is bad compared to a short gap, but not very bad. Okay? And such functions they call convex penalties. There's a way to solve those kind of optimize for those in NM log N time. So between the case of the optimal, of the arbitrary convex penalty, the arbitrary penalty and the affine penalties. So if you really think you need those kind of gap costs, you can do it, but it'll cost you a little bit. Any questions? Okay? So that's the basic framework of dynamic programming sequence comparison. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so you should be able to figure out how these dynamic programming algorithms work. They're not that hard, and they're interesting. Any questions? Okay. Any other questions about sequence comparison in general? Yes.
So instead of using a linear function, can we use like if we can give a reason for prediction by a constant factor
I see. So what you're saying is another kind of you're saying as another approach to make it cheaper to have long gaps. Might be that here we're paying something that is A plus BT. You're saying, well, what if I delete B? I reduce this value B as I move along. Well, that doesn't really help you very much. Because you don't know, when you're looking at any one of these values, ij, you don't know how many deletions you used to get to this point. Does everybody see that sort of all the state, the only information you know about what was the value of ij, of vij, you know where it ends, you know based on comparison with these recurrences, did it end with an insertion or a deletion? You don't know by looking at this thing where was the last place where it didn't have a deletion. So you can't locally say, okay, well, now at this point I'm 10 characters into my deletion. I'll make it count less. You don't know, okay, at the particular alignment here. You can't make that less. You could reduce the value of B as you went through the alignment. But that would be really disturbing to say that at the end of the strings, a deletion costs less than it does at the beginning of the strings. Which I don't know, you know, there may be an application for such things. Okay? But you don't know the count of how many deletions you did at this point without going back and looking. But if you think about it, you have to go walk backwards through the matrix to say, where did I start this run of deletions? You're no better than the general cost function. You might be walking back to the beginning of the strings. Okay? So that doesn't solve our problems here. More likely, in order to get this log thing, you want to do some kind of a binary search to figure out how far do I have to jump back for something to be interesting. Okay, but these algorithms are more complicated, and I do not wish to talk about them. Any questions? Okay, any questions about the homeworks? Now, because those, again, those are due next class. Any final questions about the homeworks? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay? Thank you very much. I will see you guys next class. Okay, bye. Stop.